and girls, Friday the 13th is actually here. That's right, it's a special Friday the 13th edition of the Kill by Kill podcast. Greetings and salutations, killers! It's your old pal Patrick Hamilton coming to you once again from Camp Crystal Lake, where it's close to it as I could possibly get. We are so happy to be coming to you with a very quick question and answer edition of the Kill by Kill podcast. Now, as usual, our mantra here is to talk about the characters, right? We love the characters of horror movies here at Kill by Kill, and we want to dig into all the gory details. But of course, along the way, there are things that we miss, or we don't explain them well enough, or you just want to know more about them. And so I hit up social media at Kill by Kill Pod on Twitter and on our Facebook page, our Facebook group, and a couple other different places. And I got some interesting questions, and I figured I would talk to you about them. Now, of course, I would love to be joined by our good friend Gina Radcliffe, but circumstances have just not been kind to us for one reason or the other. She just couldn't join us tonight. So this is going to be a solo edition. I'm going to try to make it quick and fun. Of course, it would be more fun if she was here, but what are you going to do? Anyways, let's get to some questions from you out there in the world. Now, the first one I got here is something that was asked a few times, and I think we hit on it a little bit, but basically it comes down to whether or not we believe that Jason actually sexually assaulted Chris in part 3D. You know, we kind of covered this territory a bit in episode 14, and if you haven't listened to that, I think you absolutely should. It's actually one of our most downloaded shows. It's been very popular. But briefly, I think the issue at hand here has more to do with the sequence as it was initially conceived. So Jason, he doesn't look at all like he did in the series of events as they have been laid out to us. He certainly doesn't look like anything like he does in part two. He doesn't act in the same way he does in either part two or part three in that sequence. He's kind of a fumbling boob. It's just very inconsistent. And finally, I just think this particular story that they've handed to Chris, the character and the actress who plays her, is just woefully underwritten. Wow, it's a terrible idea that's executed poorly, and as a result, it toys with a subject that simply has no place in a Friday the 13th movie, in my opinion. Jason is one thing. He's like a force of nature. He comes through and he cuts a swath through whomever is in his path. All of these sexual politics of Friday the 13th movies are primarily things that are put upon it. It's sort of established in the first film by Pamela Voorhees. The reason for her bout of revenge has to do with her perception that Jason died because the counselors were screwing and not watching her kid. Now, granted, it presents that information with Jason dying in the middle of a night as it's shot. So there's a lot of problems with that. Also, she was there. She was a cook. So I'm not entirely sure why they're to blame, and has no culpability whatsoever. We sort of estimated in our episode number 4 that a lot of this is sort of a guilty conscience thing. Anyways, all those sexual politics and mores are things that come about over time. They're things that seem to be installed in the series once the sort of Reagan 80s really kick in full gear. But Jason himself being a sexual being, not so much. I feel like because of poor editing and poor writing and the way it's executed, it just leaves all these awkward questions that we fill in with stuff that doesn't belong. Now, generally, that's our mantra here at the Kill by Kill podcast, but I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense as it's laid out. You can fill in those dots, but I'm not entirely sure I agree with the picture that it paints in the end. All right, our next question comes from Nat Bramer. My apologies, Nat, if I mispronounced your name. I'm rather legendary at it. He asks, where's Paul at the end of part two? Now, we touched on this a little bit in episode 8, But the intention was for him to die on screen. So there's even like makeup test shots of his gore makeup. And if you want to see a lot of that stuff, I would highly recommend Friday the 13th, thefranchise.com. I mean, they have lived and breathed this stuff for a lot longer than I have, obviously, and have documented a lot of these questions back and forth. I'm trying not to bite their style so much. But I will say this. If the formula holds true, Paul's totally toast. He should be. All the other sort of male champions, as it were, during that original four-piece Paramount run, they don't end well. And I assume that Paul was always meant to die. It just didn't work out the way they constructed that final third act. So if we think about it here, I'm actually pretty upset that he doesn't get that send off, because long time listeners to the podcast will know I'm not a big fan of Paul. I don't really like him as a character, and as he set up, his on-screen death would have been rather satisfying. That said, his inexplicable reappearance in the Shack of Doom, as it were, to rescue our hero, who has already outsmarted her attacker a few times, it seems like a really super dumb move. Yeah, it's such a great third act. I mean, I think part two has its pluses and minuses, and its biggest plus is the entire third act is like a locomotive train. It's as fast and as fun as the first two-thirds of the original Friday the 13th. It just really rockets along. It doesn't make a ton of sense outside of what it's trying to set up, which is a reversal of the Alice is alone in the canoe, only to be surprised by Jason, sort of Carrie-esque scare at the end of the film. Well, now, if they're both there, then Jason can't pop out, and of course he does, and then she wakes up and Paul's nowhere to be found, and maybe the mystery of him disappearing entirely is scarier? I don't know. You know, it's not the finest moment of that film. I will say that. I really wish that he had gone in style. So our next question comes to us from Ryan Larson, and he wanted us to track down info on the latest Friday the 13th soft reboot before it was rebooted yet again. There are a couple different attempts to get Friday the 13th relaunched. The 09 version, while I think it has begun to get its own sort of fan base, I think it was not very well received at the time. That said, it is a pretty decent addition to the Friday the 13th mythos. There's things that are detracted from it. It's too many movies. It would have been better to have just been one Friday the 13th movie instead of trying to encapsulate part one, part two, part three, and part four all in one movie. I think I kind of like it. Anyways, we'll see more about that when we get to it. But currently, there is a new reboot that they're aiming for October of 2017. I don't know any more than you do, more than likely. What I can tell you about is the bits and pieces that I picked up when the CW was developing a Friday the 13th TV series. It was sort of being pitched as a sort of Crystal Lake mythos, where the Voorhees family would be involved, and they were going to take a sort of, if anyone was a fan of Hannibal, when it was on television, they sort of used the books and the movies as touchstones, but they would tell those stories out of order in different ways in a method that worked for those characters in that timeline to make the best TV show. And as a result, there were a lot of surprises in a story that most of us knew all the ins and outs of. So when the movie started to heat up again as, no, maybe we want to make this a big screen effort, they pulled back on those rights. Not everyone was happy with the way it went. Development kind of stalled, and that was last year. A couple of projects from that previous year were tried again, one of them being The Lost Boys. I don't know how that's going to go. But Friday the 13th kind of languished. So what could have been if Friday the 13th had come back to television, but this time actually dealing with the movie series. I don't know. I don't know how that would have worked. Then again, I thought Hannibal was a crazy idea. And guess what? That was damn good TV. All right, let's move on. Elijah Marshall asked about the one-time touted idea of Quentin Tarantino directing what would go on to become the 2009 remake, what we were just talking about. So this is a bit of a non-story. It's apocryphal, as it were, if it weren't for the actual timeline of events, which you can find out online. There was an actual story in the trades and Variety where various people were talking to Variety off the record saying Quentin Tarantino was very interested in dipping his toes into the Friday the 13th franchise and wouldn't this be so great, and he's very, very interested and things are moving very, very fast. In the end, it was a lot of hot air. When Tarantino was asked about it, he said, I don't know anything about it. This is a made-up story. I like Friday the 13th, but I really wouldn't want to make one. Here's my guess. If you look at the timeline of these particular events, this is right around the time that Platinum Dunes gets involved, when they start bringing in their director and their take on the material. They're the ones who ended up making, primarily producing, that 09 reboot. And if I were to guess, the way things tend to move in Hollywood, if you know something kind of stalls and someone at an agency or a studio wants to goose a little bit, maybe you put some competition into the mix. Maybe you introduce the idea that Quentin Tarantino might be involved so that other people who might be on the fence of whether or not they're going to be involved suddenly go, oh, we better jump on this. Because if Quentin Tarantino wants to do it, they'll green light that in a half second. But I just feel like everything he wanted to say about the typical stock and slash, he probably said in Death Proof. And that's a hell of a movie. If you haven't watched it in a while, it's probably better than you remember it. It's really good. Don't watch the extended version, though. His intended length is really the way you want to go. Hey, what's next up to bat? Houston Joel asks, where did Jason stop and shave between the end of part 2 and Harold and Edna's convenience store in part 3? Well, let's see. We've had a few theories bandied about on this particular podcast. One was that Jason lost his hair from juicing and taking all the steroids that he needed to pump up to that part 3 weight, because he's totally yoked in that one. Another was that he used all that hair on his kitchen witch mama dolls that he sells at the Crystal Lake Swap Meet. And we talked about that in episode 17. Now, in reality, the truth is Jason's wearing a wig in part 2 the whole time. And the reason is simple. He's just shy about the right side of his face, just like Mariah Carey. Anyways, let's move on to our next question, which comes from Alan Neeson. And he asks, why doesn't Jason wear floaties? This is a good question, and I think it comes with sort of water safety philosophy. If he was over in the EU, I know several people who, like my good friend Neve, her mom is a water safety teacher in Ireland, and all kids wear floaties. Whereas here in the United States, we don't believe in them so much. We feel like it gives kids a false sense of security, and they need to know how to get out of a body of water by sheer force of will rather than rely on a flotation device. That being said, it's really due to stubborn pride. That's the only idea we can come up with. I don't know. Here's the problem with the whole Jason drowning thing. Everyone assumes that he drowns, but we don't really have any evidence other than everyone believes it. And of course, he ends up sort of being alive. We assume that he's not a zombie right away in part 2, but he also has zero fear of water. Out of nowhere, Jason swims like fucking Mike Phelps on crack. Just like he's got a jet ski attached to both feet. I was kind of mystified that I had never noticed it until this particular watch through. Hey, friend of the podcast, John Scrofini. He's been with us from the beginning, and he's got two questions, and they relate to things that we started with right away in episode 3. So first off, he's asking, how long are Mrs. Voorhees' arms that she can put a hand on Kevin Bacon's forehead while lying under a cot? Is she part orangutan? And of course, that is not true. No one can be part orangutan, meaning she's probably all orangutan? Yeah, that's the only logical conclusion. And then the second half of the question is, how high off the ground is the cot for her to be able to shove a perpendicular arrow clean through Kevin Bacon's throat? Now, we have debated this quite a bit on the podcast, and the more we think about it and try to plot it out, the less likely this particular death is. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. The average height for most cots of this particular type, ones that you would see at a summer camp, are between 6 and 10 inches off the ground. The average arrow is at least a foot, so there's not a lot of play there. There's even arrows that are longer. One could say maybe she snapped one off, but when would she have time to do this? Also, she was underneath the cot the entire time they were screwing? Anyways, this death doesn't make a lot of sense. It's super cool, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. Once again, we should probably copyright that and put it on a t-shirt because we say it all the time. Not to mention the fact that John's right. It comes up straight when an arrow probably couldn't do that. And as we've said before, this is an insanely incredible display of forearm strength because there's no other leverage other than the one hand that's holding his forehead down. So she's going through the bed frame material. She's going through the frame itself. She's going through the spring. She's going through the back of his spinal column, through his throat, and then out the other side. And it's just, wow. Talk about psycho strength. Then again, this is the same woman who will be able to throw Brenda through a fucking window just a few moments later. She is a very powerful woman. There's a lot of muscles under that beautiful rich boy sweater that she's wearing. Who else do we have up to bat? Oh, yes! It's Ben Varkentine. That's right. Varkentine. That's how you pronounce his name. Not the way I did the other day on the podcast. Oh, boy. Well, anyways, my apologies, Ben. Anyways, you know, Ben's been a great fan of us online, on Twitter, and we've had lots of back and forth about various questions. And I thought I might bring up one here, and because he's answering some questions that we had. So in his estimation, a few weeks ago, we couldn't quite figure out when everyone is talking about the hot twin, what they're talking about. Because, of course, Tina and her sister, they look exactly the same. The only way you can tell them apart is the shade of linen pant that they are wearing. And in his estimation, the way it's being talked about is that they're hot to trot, is what Ted is saying, instead of just hot. Listen. These things are open to interpretation. That is his take on it. And, oh, he also believed that Ted's teddy bear was something else he found in the house. Which, that makes more sense than Ted traveling with a teddy bear in the hopes that he would be able to use it as a seduction technique. Probably as ridiculous as Shelley traveling with both a wetsuit and a hockey mask in an effort to scare people. Because as we all know, everyone loves to scuba dive in hockey masks. And they're all crazy. They're all nuts and they're all very convenient for everything that's at hand. But that's the fun. That's why we watch it. And that's why we talk about it here on the Kill by Kill podcast. You know what? There are more questions to come next week. We are back with an all-new episode where we will be tackling the final chapter of The Final Chapter. And then after that, a new beginning. And the choo-choo train changes from kill, 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 ma, 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 to kill, 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 te, te, te. Which is something I noticed the other night while I started to watch it. That's right. They changed the sound effect to make it sound like Ted. Spoiler alert, Ted is the killer. And you would know that if you watched part 5 for any length of time. They make zero attempt to make that a fucking mystery. I'll tell you that right now. Anyways, that is to come. Thank you, everybody, for being a part of the Kill by Kill podcast. I can't tell you how much fun that we have had doing it and sending it out to you and talking to you about it online. Please do more of it. As I said, you can follow us on Twitter at KillByKillPod. If you have something that you'd like to say to us in a longer form of 140 characters that's too small, yeah, we have an email. KillByKillPod@gmail.com. You can even follow us on Instagram. Now, that's at WeWriteGood, my production company. And I have tried to do a lot of fun things on Instagram. I love your input and your, to extend the conversation over there if that's your thing. We also have the Facebook group. Just put in Kill by Kill podcast and you'll find both our page, and that has the link to the group. And we want to grow that by leaps and bounds. We'd love to have you as part of the conversation. So until next time, my friends, bye bye. Kill by Kill is produced by We Write Good and is intended for entertainment purposes only. Friday the 13th is owned by Paramount Pictures. Jason is owned by New Line Cinema. No infringement is intended. Kill by Kill logo was designed by Josh Hollis. Visit him at joshhollis.com. The Kill by Kill theme was created exclusively for us by Revenge Body. Get the whole track and much, much more at revengebodymemphis.bandcamp.com today.